You've heard me say it all the time on the podcast that you need to circle the building of your work to find the best entry point into it. But this process doesn't just ensure strong opening pages, it allows you to navigate the whole building with confidence, knowing which doors to throw wide open and which ones to keep locked, which walls to smash down and which ones to reinforce as you create a space you'd like to live inside. In my Circling the Building of Your Work webinar, I'll guide you through the transformation of my latest work in progress, showing you examples of my constantly evolving pages in my quest to find the best way into a story I've always wanted to tell. In doing so, I'll highlight the intentionality you need to bring to your decision-making, how to play around with point of view, structure, timeline, voice, and other essential elements of craft, how to frame a narrative and choose the lens through which you'd like to view it, the questions you'll need to ask yourself throughout the process, how to circle back from false starts, and how rewarding the entire process can be. You'll also be assigned to other delegates to work with after the webinar to gain objectivity, input, and fresh perspectives as you circle the building of your own work in progress. This course will be run on the 13th of May from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information and to register, go to Bianca Murray and look for the courses tab. Hi there and welcome to our show, The Shit No One Tells You About Writing. I'm Bianca Murray and I'm joined by Carly Waters and Cece Lira from PS Literary Agency. Hi everyone, welcome back to another Books with Hooks. As per usual, we are diving straight in. Carly, will you please kick us off?
Dear Carly, I'm seeking representation for my crime adventure mystery novel, Death on the South Coal. I hope you will find time to read my manuscript, Death on the South Coal, a 71,000-word novel which combines the calculated suspense of a murder mystery with the surging adrenaline rush of an outdoor thriller that will appeal to fans of Breathless by Amy McCulloch. World-weary detective Chief Inspector Douglas McFarlane is plucked by helicopter from a much-needed hiking holiday in the Scottish Highlands and, 24 hours later, is dropped off on Mount Everest to investigate the suspicious death of an upper-class influencer. In the course of his investigation, he is injured at the highest camp in the world and flown to safety. While recuperating from his injuries, McFarlane sifts the evidence uncovered by his team, including Detective Sergeant Kyra Patel and the forensic pathologist Dr. Helen Connolly. The case uncovers the shady world of a minor grifter and a history of abuse in a boarding school, while conflict his narcissistic boss leads to an internal investigation of leaked secrets. Along the way, Detective Chief Inspector McFarlane finds a new job and a new romance. I have been a professional scientist for several decades and have written several hundred scientific papers and two professional books on microbiology. Death on the South Coal is my first novel. Thanks for your consideration. I shall look forward to hearing from you. Paul Levitt.
Thank you, Carly. Okay, what was the word count there and what was your take on that?
All right, this one came in at 243 words. So we'll start at the top. I don't know what South Coal means. It's like South, like as in the directional south, and then coal, like C-O-L. Like sometimes C-O-L, coal is short for colonel. So I wasn't sure. I don't know. Or a coal is a location. I don't really know what this title means. And it could just be me because I do not know anything about hiking in the Scottish Highlands or Mount Everest. And that could be beyond me. And maybe the person who is receiving this knows what that means, but I do not. It is also not capitalized, so we always suggest with titles that they are in all caps. That way they stand out and they're very clear to us, you know, what we are looking at and what we are reading. It also helps titles become memorable. And again, as we're scanning, that is the first thing that jumps out to us. So it's very, very important. 71,000 words, it's not like overly short. I guess I would call something short maybe like 65,000 words. I think in this category, it sounds like it's moving really fast at 71,000 words. So I think, you know, I'm not concerned at all with that. I think we probably need another comp. I would probably actually suggest a TV show or movie comp in this instance. I didn't look up your comp in terms of timeline, if it was kind of older or newer. So I will assume that you did your research and it is from the last 5 years. But I would definitely suggest a movie comp, a thriller movie comp. I think that could really help here in terms of making it really fresh and punchy and cinematic. Okay. In terms of the body paragraph, I think the entire story is this bit that says the case uncovers the shady world of a minor grifter and a history of abuse in a boarding school, while conflict with his narcissistic boss leads to an internal investigation of leaked secrets. To me, like, that seems like the whole story. So I don't think you need a lot of the surrounding materials, you know, above and below this. I think, like, that's what we have to figure out is, again, why was this detective called to do this? I think you can probably keep the bit about, you know, being taken by helicopter on his holiday. And you have the suspicious death of a bracket upper class influencer end bracket. I don't know why the brackets around that. I don't know if you're planning on giving that person a name and just for the sake of this educational platform, you just decided to just kind of like leave that as a placeholder. I found that kind of interesting. I don't know. It's standing out to me, I guess, because it's in brackets. So I'm just trying to figure out, you know, again, is that a placeholder? I'm assuming that it probably is. Yeah. So I don't know. I feel like that piece seems really interesting to me. Like the minor grifter, history abuse in the boarding school piece. The thing that I definitely think has to go is along the way, Detective Chief Inspector McFarland finds a new job and a new romance, because that makes it seem like everything's tidy at the end. And I know the ending. So why am I reading the book? Right? You want to give me a reason to want to read the book, to want to know what happens. If you tell me everything's fine in the end, after introducing a really dangerous adventure story, you know, then I'm kind of like, okay, why do I need to read this book? So you definitely want to leave us on more of a cliffhanger here, which is, again, why we need to focus on the drama at the boarding school, which is, again, I don't want to misspeak about what your book is about, but to me, it seems like that is what the book is about and definitely what we should be focusing on. In terms of the bio, I would suggest that you either name the lab you work at or the university that you work at, or name maybe the largest publication you've been published in. Like, I know in biology, it could be like Nature magazine. Again, if you know what I mean? Like, I think that could really help. It's pretty vague. And again, could be intentional. Again, for this platform, you don't want to tell us where you work. That's perfectly okay. But for the sake of querying, you would want to give some context to the agent about where you work. Anything about you would be useful here. Again, because we are talking about Scotland, we're also talking about Mount Everest. You know, do you live in either of those locations? Do you have experience in either of those locations? Has your research taken you to these locations and therefore you know about them? So those would be some things I would probably suggest there. And you have a bit of word count to play with. As I said, it wasn't too long of a query letter. So that would be my advice.
Thank you, Carly. Okay, we're handing it across to Cece.
Yeah, just building off what Carly said, because I think she made some really great points. When I first read this, I was like, the plot points feel disconnected. I don't understand how the suspicious death and then his later injury have to do with the world he uncovers, except for the fact that he uncovers them while recovering from the injury. But like, I don't understand the causality there. So I almost feel like that first half of the paragraph should go. Like, I don't actually think we need to know about the helicopter or dropping off. I mean, we obviously don't know how much we need to know because we don't know your whole story. But if the bulk of the book is, as Carly suggested, the shady world of a minor grifter and a history of abuse in a boarding school, which, yes, sounds very compelling, then focus on that. You know, we don't need the movement of him like being helicoptered to one place and then being rescued into safety. And then the names of the people who are investigating with him, you know, Sergeant Tell and Dr. Helen Connolly. Like, we just don't need all this information. I would actually expand on that investigation if it is indeed the bulk of the book. And I would also, and this is really important, show a link between this investigation, Shady World of a Minor Grifter and a History of Abuse in a Boarding School, and the link between the conflict with his narcissistic boss that leads to an internal investigation. You know, perhaps the internal investigation leads to him getting, you know, reassigned in the case right when he was about to crack it. And then, you know, because of internal corruption, the bad guy might get away with it. And so he needs to pretend to his boss that he's okay with things that his boss are doing when really he's not. Like, I just need, you know, a link between these two things because it's just really, really important in storytelling. A common mistake I see in query letters is two plot points that are happening at the same time, but I don't see a relationship between them. And that actually signals to agents that you haven't honored the dominoes tipping over effect that we expect in storytelling. If that is your intention, if that's your vision, that's okay because you get to do whatever you want in your story. But oftentimes when I talk to writers, they tell me, no, there is causality. I just didn't show it in the query letter. And if that's you, I would really recommend you do that because it will elevate your story and it will signal to agents who are reading this that this is following those story beats that we expect.
Yeah, just one thing to chime in there. I want to know, like, if the boss has something over him there has to be something in this kind of tangled web of secrets where the boss is lording this over him. So then he has to do this, and then he has to go rogue because he's trying to escape from getting off the beaten path of finding what the true story here is in terms of the shady world. So I think there's this leaked secrets bit. I think there's a lot more to it. And I think you have to kind of explain where the power struggle is, because I also think that would be quite it.
I have a question. Do you not think that this author, in terms of using Detective Inspector Kara Patel and Helen Donnelly, is not having a nod to the diversity of the book, that we've also, it's not just male characters, that we've got a diverse cast and we've got strong female characters? I'm wondering if that's the kind of vibe I'm getting there. And if that's what they're trying to do, it's clearly not working and you don't think it should be there.
That's what I thought as well. I made that leap and that assumption as well, which, you know, seems really interesting. I want to know, you know, why these people are on his team and what they have to kind of do with solving it. I guess I was a little bit confused by, you know, the last line again, which I said we had to cut, which was, you know, then he finds a new job and finds a new romance. So then I'm like, okay, like, what do all these people have to do with each other? Not to say that he has to enter a romantic relationship with anybody he works with, but I'm just trying to figure out like how these people are all in relation to each other, how they became this team, and why they need each other. Because I think what Cece's talking about, like, how are these things all connected? I guess, and again, we don't have to necessarily go into detail in the query letter to go that deep. But yeah, I'd be curious about how this team came to be working together. Because in a book, you chose these characters specifically, and you chose them for a reason. So there's a reason you put these group of people together, which Bianca's suggesting, you know, could be for many reasons.
Okay, thank you. All right, so Carly, will you give us a summary of those opening pages?
Yes, so we start with a prologue. We are on a hike. I'm just trying to figure out if it names where the hike is, but you know, we can make assumptions based on the query letter, obviously, but we are on a hike. Somebody is up in the mountains. There's the Milky Way. We understand that it's a very remote location, you know, that this person is out on a hike. They're in a tent. They're just sleeping on the ground. And then an intruder comes in, opens the tent, demands money from the person who is sleeping. It's a little unclear if this person who is in the sleeping bag is alive or not. I would leave that up to discussion. But this person's yelling at them, opens the bag that they're traveling with, shakes it all out, you know, tries to find the money, sees the snacks, finds these dollar bills in multiple denominations. And then we know that there is a knife, and then the light in the tent goes out. Now we are in chapter one called Beginning. Our main character, Douglas McFarlane, is on a hike. He is answering his phone. His boss has been trying to get a hold of him. He has been on this, you know, remote hike again, which we know from the query letter. And his boss is trying to get a hold of him. He's missed like 20 calls. And so he says, we got to pick you up. You got a job to do. They say they're going to take him from Scotland to London and get him to Nepal, because he explains there's been a suspicious death of a British citizen on Mount Everest. Again, putting the pieces together, this is what happened potentially in the prologue. He gets picked up by the Scottish police, who then bring him in, and they have a bit of a conversation about the people that they know in the community, and they get him to, yeah, the helicopter, and that's it.
Wow, that's a lot happening in 5 opening pages. So the question begs is, what do we think of the prologue?
You know, it's a good question. I wrote, my notes are, it's well written and I don't hate it, but are we starting in the right place? Which, like, copy paste for any prologue or any episode, we probably say a version of the same thing. You know, as I kind of alluded to in my summary, there's nothing that we're not learning here that we don't kind of know in the query letter, which to me suggests that the jacket copy can do all of this. So if the jacket copy sets the tone, should we just let the story tell itself? I probably think so. But it is well written. So again, who am I to say that this, you know, in the grand scheme of things, isn't going to work? But I never suggest kind of relying on the strength of a prologue to carry you through. Because again, if an agent requests materials, you have to submit your prologue because it is part of your opening pages, such as you did here, which you kind of understand that. I just felt like, and then calling chapter one Beginning, I don't know, could we come up with a better title? Or do we need chapter titles? Can we just call it chapter one? It seemed a bit kind of on the nose for me. Okay, and then getting to the pages. I think the biggest thing that's missing here, and like Bianca alluded to, this is there's a whole lot jam-packed in these opening pages, and it was very interesting. The biggest thing that I think was missing is his interiority. Like, is he not curious about why his boss is calling? Why did he need this getaway, this vacation so badly? If he presumably has a really important job and he wanted 2 weeks hiking in the Scottish Highlands to just get away, as somebody who just came back from 10 days vacation, I understand. Sometimes we gotta get away. So like, again, why did he need to be unplugged so badly? And what are the repercussions of working in a job where you're on demand all the time? And, you know, maybe you do need to be, you know, got a hold of. And maybe he could be thinking like, oh, why wasn't my satellite phone working? You know, if he was that important and needed to be found so bad, he probably would have also had a satellite phone, not just a cell phone. Anyway, I digress. So I want to know the interiority of how he feels about his boss trying to track him down. And the dialogue goes, I'm on a hiking vacation, sir, as you know, trying to keep off the grid for a couple of weeks. I've been trying to reach you since this morning. Don't you check your voicemails? McFarlane held the phone away from his ear, presuming that his boss is kind of yelling at him. But that was the opportunity there to kind of get at, you know, it was you I was getting away from, you asshole, or like whatever the, you know, whatever that interiority is. Or he thought to himself, it was nice not to hear that goddamn voice in his ear for the past 2 weeks. You know, like, what's the energy? Is he not curious about why his boss is calling, or frustrated or annoyed? Or that's the kind of energy I'm trying to explain that we're missing here. That's the big piece, because I think the writing's good. I think the dialogue's good. I think the energy's good, but he spends more time talking about other characters than kind of going into his own psyche. So I think we need more about him to understand why all of this is such a mystery, because to us right now, there is no mystery. It's just, there's a dude getting picked up, getting called back in to do his job. I don't see the mystery. There is no mystery. Like, this guy's just doing his job, right? So then we have to figure out what's the relationship, what's the power play. You know, again, we know from the query letter that it's not a great relationship between him and his boss. So there's just a lot to be kind of discovered and unraveled. But I think it's a good foundation. I think the story seems really interesting.
Thank you, Carly. Okay, Cece, handing it across to you now.
I thought that was a brilliant analysis on Carly's part. I agree with absolutely everything. I'll read the first paragraph to highlight a few other things so that we're not just repeating ourselves. Douglas McFarlane shrugged off his backpack, leaned it against the wall of the campsite office, and pulled out his phone, period. As soon as he got a signal, the phone rang, period. He stabbed at the keypad when he saw his boss's name on the screen, period. I read the period, so you know it's three sentences. Notice that all these three sentences are purely describing movement. I call this a stage direction beginning, opener, if you will. It's just stage directions. I feel very strongly about this, and this is obviously a matter of taste because everything in storytelling is. Do not have your first line be a stage direction. Don't do it. You're not writing a screenplay. You are writing a book. Okay, a novel in this case. You want your first line to have interiority. And if you don't want it to be interiority, you certainly don't want it to be stage directions. We do not connect with stage directions. Our brains do not imprint with stage directions. It is boring. Just be very honest here. It's boring. You don't want to begin with boring. You want to begin with interesting. So I wouldn't have this be the first line, and I would certainly not have all lines of that paragraph be stage directions. It is super subjective, like all things, as I said, but hey, that's my take. I think that you have the foundation for interiority in place because you have a scene where there's a disruption. He gets a call and his vacation is interrupted. You have another instance in which he's referred to as VIP by one of the detectives or police officers. And so there's an opportunity for us to go inside his psyche and find out if that tickles his ego or if that makes him feel uncomfortable or if it's the first time someone has called him a VIP, if he's always wanted someone to call him a VIP. Like, there's just so much opportunity here. You have the foundation. You have the nuts and bolts, but you're not fully leveraging the foundation you've created. And I think you should. I think that the interiority here could be way, way deeper. And I did mark the moments, and our Substack supporters will be able to see that. Another thing that I would make sure you have are curiosity seeds. You know, we're not getting curiosity seeds, and so I do think we need that as well.
Thank you, Cece. Okay, before we hand it across to Cece to hear her query letter, let's hear a word from our sponsors.
This weekend, we were at a birthday party, and our Francophone friend asked my son a question in French, and he was able to converse with her. This felt like a huge parenting milestone. Immersion education for the win, but a bit of a womp womp on my part because I only learned English as a kid, and I'm still getting my French up to conversation level. I'm always looking for the best tools so that I can keep up with my friends and my kids in their French speaking. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app, and it truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. A trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. That's Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, Polish, so many more. With that fast language acquisition, Rosetta Stone immerses you in so many ways. There's no English translations. You can really speak, listen, and think in that language. It's an intuitive process. You pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. There's the speech recognition. The built-in true accent feature gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. It's convenient, flexible learning anytime on the go, on the app, or on the desktop. And it has amazing value. Lifetime membership for 25 languages for any and all trips and language needs in your life. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses on Rosetta Stone for 50% off. That's a steal. Don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential now. The Shit About Writing listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning now.
Okay, Cece, diving back in, let's hear your query letter.
Dear Carly Waters, Cece Lira, and Bianca Murray, my contemporary YA novel, Shadow Boys, 60,000 words, is Dear Evan Hansen meets a Me Too story set in Y2K. I am reaching out because you support writers who are neurodivergent, Cece's interest in books that expose what's hidden in plain sight with a social justice angle, and Carly's love of reading stories about social issues and family. By the way, thank you so much for the podcast. It's invaluable. 17-year-old autistic band geek Jack Murray has one goal for senior year 2001: get noticed. His surefire plan includes painting his 1967 Plymouth Barracuda vibrant purple and switching out his entire wardrobe for designer clothes he secretly bought at the thrift store. But everything changes for Jack when Ben Newsom, captain of the basketball team and prom king frontrunner, comments on Jack's new outfits and gives him the nickname Sweater Vest. Jack is over the moon, and then Ben does something unexpected. He invites Jack to his Halloween house party. Being in Ben's orbit skyrockets Jack's popularity, and people start noticing him. For the first time in Jack's life, he feels seen. That is, until Jack's best friend accuses Ben of sexual assault. Unwilling to believe that his new friend, a guy who has done so much for him, could possibly do something so terrible, Jack ignores the signs until the night when Ben attacks him too. As friends pressure him to speak out, Jack must decide if he will stay silent, live with the shame of what he survived, or tell the world what Ben did and face public exposure he might never escape. Like my main character, I have autism spectrum disorder, and I'm a survivor of sexual assault. With 1 in 9 girls and 1 in 20 boys under the age of 18 experiencing sexual abuse or assault, and only 310 out of every 1,000 sexual assaults reported, I wrote this novel to explore heavier themes in a way that makes it accessible for young readers and to show victims that speaking up is empowering and can help with healing. This book is for fans of the character's journey in Darius the Great Is Not Okay, the themes of Speak, and the coming-of-age story of Jagged Little Pill, the novel. I am an active SCBWI member. My 2021 Webtoon Canvas Award-nominated digital comic, Parish, has over 1.5 million views and over 25,000 subscribers. I was a professional actor as a child and still do select projects. Trigger warnings, sexual assault, teen suicide attempt. I appreciate your consideration. Warm regards, Jacob Reynolds.
Thank you so much, Cece. Okay, powerful query letter. How many words is that clocking in at?
This one came in at 409 words. So from the top, this is such a minor thing, but the second sentence in the plot paragraph reads, "But everything changes for Jack." I would remove the "but." it's not in opposition to anything right now because we hear about his plan in the previous sentence. So it's, again, super minor. If you don't want to change, that's fine. But it would just make this run a little bit more smoothly, I believe, because we have an everything changes down the line, which is when he becomes popular. I also have to say, and this says so much about me and my own high school experience, which I was not popular in high school. When I read the line, gives him the nickname Sweater Vest, I was like, oh no, they're making fun of him. Because I thought that was a bad thing, you know, like being called Sweater Vest. But apparently, like, Jack is over the moon, because that's the line we get about being called Sweater Vest. So see, I know nothing, guys. I know nothing about being popular. I do think that the protagonist's journey is presented very clearly, right? Like, story-wise, I do think you did a really good job of being like, here are the story beats with causality, with dominoes tipping over. Like, I can see it. I do think that there's something missing, though. We have the line that reads that Jack must decide what to do, right? People are pressuring him. He needs to decide what to do. It would be, story-wise, quite useful and quite compelling to add a ticking time clock. That adds pressure, that adds like culminating in an event. And I don't know what that event could be because I don't know your story, but like there's going to be a, you know, prom night or something. And for some reason, the reason needs to make sense. When it comes to prom night, Jack must decide by then or else dun, dun, dun. You know, I feel like if you were to add that ticking time pressure, it would really, really elevate the story and just make it even more curiosity inducing. It's clearly a really powerful novel, and I really do appreciate the stats that you added towards the end. You know, a lot of authors would have begun their query letter with these stats because these are important stats in our world. But hey, here's the reality. The stats would not make us curious. They would make us feel empathy. They would make us feel concerned for the world. They would remind us of the dumpster fire planet we live in. But if you start with a story that is curiosity inducing, like you did, and then you add the stats, you're just highlighting the importance of this book. And I really, really appreciated that.
Thank you so much, Cece. Okay, Carly, your thoughts?
Okay, so I really like the title, Shadow Boys. I think that's an awesome title. I didn't do any research to see if there's another book or movie or anything out there like it, but love that title. I think it's great. Okay, so I think the paragraph, the surefire plan includes painting his car, I think the first half of that has to go. I don't know. It felt like a little bit familiar to me. I think that you were trying to come up with like an interesting entry point into explaining his personality. But I don't know if we need the car part. I think unless the car is like this character that is like massively important. And it seems like, you know, we're not in the opening pages. It does seem like the car obviously plays a role. So yeah, unless the car plays like a real big role in the book, I would probably just focus on the way that he kind of wants to switch out the clothing probably. But even still, you could just like, again, if you want to simplify it, you could say something, you know, just to the effect of this character feels invisible. And then Ben Newsom, the captain, prom king, front runner. Again, you could simplify that as well. You know, gives him the nickname, he's over the moon, right? So I think you just got to like chop out that first half and simplify that quite a bit. I think that would help you. And then you could even just start with, you know, once his popularity skyrockets. I almost feel like that's the start of the story because I think what to me feels so familiar is like a misfit teen. I'll be honest with you. You know, we've seen this movie. We've read this book. We've seen this television show, The Misfit Teen. So I think that maybe they could start with, you know, when so-and-so character, again, give him a little bit of description, befriends a popular kid and his popularity begins to skyrocket. For the first time he feels seen, that is until Jack's best friend accuses Ben of sexual assault. I almost think that could be your opening line. And then we don't need a lot of the explainer that feels overly familiar, that an agent will think like, what's unique about this, right? We want to give them, what is the most unique part of this teen high school drama story? And I think to me, that's probably a better starting point. Because I definitely think we're just focusing on the wrong things with the car, in my opinion. Another thing that I was curious about, and like, I just want to be clear, like assault is assault, point blank, doesn't matter. But there's no mention of gender when we talk about the best friend. And so I just think sometimes that could just add some layers here so we can kind of figure out, you know, what the interrelational piece, how that's all coming into play. You might have intentionally left that out just to kind of leave us like, doesn't matter if it's female or male that was assaulted. I agree, assault is assault. But from a character development point of view, I don't know. I just think some of the layers could be added here in that capacity. So I'll leave that note with you to do what you want with. But yeah, I mean, overall, just thank you for sharing this with us. And we're just so glad that you feel like we're a safe place to explore some of these more serious topics. And yeah, we're really grateful that you have shared this with us. And then in terms of the last comps, you have comps at the beginning and the end. So I don't think we need comps in both places. So I think you got to figure out what's more important. I think your Dear Evan Hansen meets Me Too said Y2K is stronger than the bottom pieces, because Speak is quite a bit older now. I want to say it's almost 15, if not 20 years old now. I don't want to misspeak, but I think Speak is a seminal text in this category, but it is quite old. And then Jagged Little Pill, the novel, again, if it's that important, then should it be with the comps at the top? So I'll leave all those notes with you. Thank you to Jacob.
Thank you, Carly. Okay, Cece, will you tell us what's in the opening pages?
Okay, so we have the protagonist driving to school. Through interiority, we learn that he is wearing new clothes and has social goals for himself. So suddenly, a voice speaks from the back seat of the car, and he didn't know there was anyone in the car with him. He finds out it's his best friend who actually slept in the car. They chat. He gives his best friend his packed lunch. His friend looks at his clothes and says, well, I don't think that's you. They chat about their families. The bell rings and they go to school.
Okay, thank you. All right, so now the question we always ask, is he starting in the right place with this?
No, categorically no. I'll get to why in a second. I do always think that when it comes to starting in the right place or not, so they're starting in the right place and then they're starting in the right way. You can choose the right place, but if you don't execute it in the right way, it doesn't matter because the result won't be achieved. But sometimes it's also possible that we as agents and, you know, as people reading books can misdiagnose the not starting in the right place situation. Because depending on what the writer wants to accomplish, they can make the wrong place, quote unquote, work if they change certain elements of it, thus making it the right place. So I'll start with the elements and then I'll say, you know, why I don't think this is the right place as it stands. So first, we have the protagonist driving to school and we have a focus on movements, on things that are happening, on description. The description is very strong. So great job. But we don't have interiority. We don't have deep psychological acuity. A story about a high school misfit who's about to go on the journey he's about to go in, it's not just interiority. We need deep interiority and psychological acuity. So that's missing here. Examples. We have him looking in the mirror at his like new look and nothing about how he feels. Does he feel like a fraud? Does he feel like an imposter? Does he, you know, wonder how this other guy who does look like the popular kid, who does look like he looks now, how long he takes to get ready in the morning because it took him so long? Does he think he were a fraud? Is he comparing himself to someone else? Like, we need to dig deeper. That's just one example. Again, there are many, many more. We just need more deep interiority. The second thing is this. Every strong opening scene has a disruption. The disruption that I see here is his friend is in the back seat and he didn't know. Two things on that. One, if there's someone in the back seat of your car, aren't you going to be freaked out a little? Like, not even a little, a lot. Like, there's no fear. There's no visceral moment of panic. There's no shock. We get interiority before we get emotion. I don't actually think we get emotion on the fact that his friend is there. Like, it's all very factual and level-headed, and it doesn't actually feel like a disruption. It's a disruption in name only, and that doesn't work. The other thing is, in order for disruption to work, it's not just any disruption that matters. It has to be a disruption that either reveals greater depth of the existing power dynamics or a disruption that changes power dynamics, or both. You can also have both. And we don't have that here. Why? Because we don't have power imbalance. Like, his best friend is, he's comfortable around his best friend. He's himself. There's no part of him that's withholding anything. There's a part of him that's withholding things in a kind and empathetic way, but not in a this actually matters to the story and is curiosity-inducing sort of way. So I don't think it's the right place. I think the right place would have power imbalance because you would need that. I think that there's missed opportunities too to further the relationships. You know, like you have a protagonist who clearly in many ways has more than his best friend. Like, he's sharing his lunch. He doesn't have the heart to tell him certain things. And I just needed more details on his relationships to be able to really feel that with him. And also his relationship with himself. We do know about his social goals, but we don't know deep down, like, what his fantasy life looks like. You know, is there a person he has a crush on? Is there a club he really wants to be a part of? Is he thinking about the adults he knows in his life? And clearly the ones who used to be popular in high school are the successful ones, and that's what he wants out of his world. Is it because he reads books and he's always reading books about, you know, close-knit group of friends, and he only has one friend who, yes, he likes, but he wants a group? I guess I just wanted more specificity and more texture when it comes to his social goals. Anyway, this is all to say my take, no, you're not starting in the right place. This place is designed to give us context on the backstory. And it's doing that really well. But context on the backstory is not the job of the opening pages. The job of the opening pages is to make us feel story-forward curiosity, meaning curiosity about what's going to happen next. He's too safe. He's too safe in these pages. There's no power imbalance, no real disruption, no shift in dynamics or expectations. So it's just too comfortable a position for a start of a novel, especially a novel about a misfit. So I'd rewrite the beginning, change the location, or if you're set on this location, if you love it, then you have to also change the elements that are in it right now.
Thank you, Cece. Okay, Carly, your thoughts?
Yeah, so my main notes were, I really liked the energy of this, and I liked the banter between the friends, so I think there was a lot to like here, but I felt like I was reading something that was for the reader, aka me, as opposed to what I think would have naturally potentially have happened, which makes me think, again, it's a lot of setup, it's a lot of explaining the relationship, it's a lot of factual information. And I just didn't really feel like we were in a scene enough. Like, to me, I agree with Cece. He should have jumped out of his seat when he felt like, you know, there was somebody in the back seat. And I can't remember if he was actively driving at that point or whether he was parked. But like, if you were driving, then like, did you swerve? Did you accidentally hit your indicator? Like, ah, you know, did you freak out? I just felt like it was very obvious that, again, if we were thinking about the cinematically, like, we were just kind of panning on this one moment and or just kind of like a close up on this one moment, as opposed to getting some more movement, whether, again, they park and they walk into school together, or does somebody cut them off in the parking lot? Then again, like, I'm saying cliche things, but you're the writer. You think of more interesting things than what I'm suggesting. But like, where is the drama in this moment? It's very comfortable. It's very settled in. And I just feel like, again, this is the entry point to the novel. Like, this is your moment to kind of to shine and hook us and get us turning the pages. And I just felt like, again, I liked the energy, but it was a very comfortable scene that we were in. And I just felt like we needed something else. There just wasn't enough happening for me.
Okay, thank you to Carly and Cece for that. Remember, if you want to submit for Books with Hooks, you go to our website, The Shit About Writing, go to the Books with Hooks tab, and you can submit there. Thank you so much, Carly and Cece, and please join us next week for our author interview.
A reminder that this is an unscripted program, and our conversations have been edited and condensed and is not a full picture of our feedback or conversation directly with each author. As always, refer back to our written notes for the fulsome picture. Carly Waters and Cece Lira are agents at PS Literary Agency, but their work on this podcast is not affiliated with the agency, and the views expressed by Carly and Cece on this podcast are solely that of them as podcast co-hosts and do not necessarily reflect the views, opinions, policies, or position of PS Literary Agency. A reminder about all the ways that you can support us as a show: rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, tell your writing friends about us. We'd love to help as many writers as possible. And follow us on our Substack newsletter. Get our stacked newsletter on a weekly basis, bonus videos, articles, essays, advice, and more. You can find it at theshitaboutwriting.substack.com. That's theshitaboutwriting.substack.com.
And that's it for today's episode. I hope you'll join us for next week's show. In the meantime, keep at it. Remember, it just takes one yes. You've heard me say it all the time on the podcast that you need to circle the building of your work to find the best entry point into it. But this process doesn't just ensure strong opening pages. It allows you to navigate the whole building with confidence, knowing which doors to throw wide open and which ones to keep locked, which walls to smash down and which ones to reinforce as you create a space you'd like to live inside. In my Circling the Building of Your Work webinar, I'll guide you through the transformation of my latest work in progress, showing you examples of my constantly evolving pages in my quest to find the best way into a story I've always wanted to tell. In doing so, I'll highlight the intentionality you need to bring to your decision-making, how to play around with point of view, structure, timeline, voice, and other essential elements of craft, how to frame a narrative and choose the lens through which you'd like to view it, the questions you'll need to ask yourself throughout the process, how to circle back from false starts, and how rewarding the entire process can be. You'll also be assigned to other delegates to work with after the webinar to gain objectivity, input, and fresh perspectives as you circle the building of your own work in progress. This course will be run on the 13th of May from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information and to register, go to Bianca Murray and look for the courses tab.